I'm pulling away from the curb because I had to drop my son off today at college. We all know what that means. It's another drive to work. Okay, so today I'm talking all about Outlaws of Thunder Junction. So today is the story of the vision design of the set. I led the vision design, so very familiar with the story. So let's get into it. Okay, so last year in March of the Machine, there was a giant Phyrexian war that forever changed the cosmology of the multiverse. So one of the reasons we did that was it would allow us to design some sets that we couldn't design before. So one of the ideas that we're, like, once we did it, one of the questions we asked ourselves is, okay, what can we now make that we couldn't make before? So one idea that I was really interested in was sort of what I will call a thematic set, which is, imagine if you pick a theme, and then because of the Omen Pass, you're allowed to get people from across the multiverse here. So you can do something that's sort of a connective tissue theme, and then you can use the Omen Pass to bring all people of that, or many characters of that theme to the same place. And the theme we wanted to use was actually a theme we almost used in a different set. So many years ago, we made a set called Magic Origins. It's probably best known as a set where it had the five founding members of, or the five first members of the Gatewatch. I guess only four of them were founding. And introduced them, showed them as legendary creatures. You saw their spark, and they were double face cards. And on the back face, it had their planeswalker. And the story represented the sparking of those five characters. Gideon and Jace and Chandra and Liliana and Nyssa. And it showed them on their original plane and then their first plane after they sparked. Anyway, before it became that theme, before we were going into the Gatewatch story, it was a villain's theme. Originally, I think Sean Main led that set. When he first started, they were exploring doing a villain theme. And one of the things about core sets is you're not limited to a place. So that had the ability for it to be in multiple places. Although core sets don't do as much like legendary creatures and stuff. Anyway, we liked the theme. It didn't work there. But when I said, oh, we can do anything we want, we can go across the multiverse, I was very intrigued by the idea of doing a villain's theme. That felt like it would be a fun theme. And there are a lot of fun villains from around the multiverse. So the idea was, okay, this set's going to be a villain theme set, and we're going to be able to pull in things. So the story got built around a villain story trope, which is the heist. It's a heist story. And the heist story is a story where you have a bunch of people, like a bunch of villains getting together to do a big score, robbing something or, you know. Anyway, that was the kind of story we wanted to tell. And then when we figured out, okay, we were doing villains, we were looking for a location, we wanted to do a new world. We liked the idea that creatures had come from across the multiverse through the Omen Pass to this world. So something else we've been trying to do for a long time is something set following like the Western genre. And we've tried to do it many times over the years. There's lots of challenges with the Western genre. But once we realized we wanted a new world and we wanted a sense of villainy and a sense of a little bit, we liked sort of a frontier sense to it. It just seemed like a good pairing. That the West was kind of known, you know, the American West as, you know, there was law, but the law was sort of stretched thin and, you know, there were a lot of bad guys. And so the idea of a set for a villain set seemed pretty cool. Okay, so the idea was, one of the things we've been doing a lot, I've talked about this for Murders of Karloff Manor, is trying to get better at figuring out how to get the words we want on the cards That, like, we're trying to represent the idea of villains. Okay, well, what represents villainy? So the number one thing we had was crime. I mean, villains almost definitionally commit crimes. That's what they do. That's what makes you a villain. And so we spent some time figuring out, well, what does it mean? What could crimes mean? And we explored a lot of different things. So one of the larger challenges we've been facing recently, so the last, I don't know, 10 years, we've been sort of facing what we call an eternal format, or eternal environment, which means that once upon a time, standard was kind of the main environment, and we sort of built everything towards standard. But now that Commander and Modern and Pioneer, there's a lot of other formats that are taking up a lot of attention. And so we want to make sure that we are building with themes that aren't what we call parasitic, meaning if I make a theme that only exists in the set I'm making it in, and there are no cards to support that theme outside the set I'm making it in, then it becomes really hard to build decks. It's hard to build a 60-card deck with four of. It's really hard to build a 100-card deck singleton with one of. And what we found was even back when we had the blocks, even when there were three sets, that when you had an insular theme, it became hard to build decks, especially in Commander, with that theme. And so one of the things we've been looking at as we've been building new things is there a way to build something new that allows players to build decks they couldn't build before, but makes use of pieces that pre-exist? Like, is there a forward-facing theme with a backward-facing compatibility? So what we ended up doing with crimes is we said, okay, what do you already do in Magic that feels like a crime? And the original version we had was whenever I do something that either targets, destroys, or damages my opponent or some of their stuff. Stuff defined as their permanents, their spells, or their cards in the graveyard. If I'm messing with them... Now, eventually what happened was we turned it over as targeted, destroyed, or dealt damage to. And what happened was in set design, they worked with the rules manager. And it turns out that target, very clear. The rules know when you're targeting something. Damaging and destroying are vaguer. The classic example is, let's say I cast the card Mutilate. Mutilate does minus X to all creatures, where X is the number of swamps you control. Okay, so let's say I have 8 swamps and no creature on the battlefield is more than 8 toughness, so I cast it and there's 10 creatures on the battlefield. They all get -8/-8, none of which survive that. Okay, has my Mutilate destroyed them? No, it has not. My Mutilate merely made their toughness 0. What destroyed them was the game with state-based actions. So the problem we would run into is we'd get into situations where intuitively it felt like something did something, but technically by the rules it didn't. Mutilate did not destroy any creatures, even though it kind of did, but it didn't technically. And technically, sadly, or not sadly, but technically is how the rules work. And so what we found was there just wasn't a way to define the damage and the destruction in a way that created the effects we wanted. So that's why we fell back to just targeting, because it worked. And what we felt is targeting hit the vast majority of the times that you were doing something, you were targeting. Yes, there is exceptions. But one of the things that in general we have learned is, you know, when you're talking about, you know, 27,000 plus cards, look, you're not going to hit 100% on flavor on everything. There's going to be some disconnect. Do most things that feel like crimes get hit by our definition? Yeah, they do. The vast majority do. Does it hit some things that don't feel like crimes? Yes, it does. But once again, flavor when you're doing a modular game with as many component pieces as we have, getting a lot that feel right is about as best as you can do. And so, and the other thing is, and we've run into this, is when you it requires a lot of words to get added for a little payoff. Like, yeah, we can add 10 extra words, and now it hits 100 cards it didn't hit before out of the 27,000. It's like, wow, is that worth the 8 extra words, 10 extra words? Like, it's not, usually. Anyway, we ended up with just targeting. The thing we liked about it was it definitely had that feel like, oh, crimes is I'm messing with my opponent, I'm doing stuff with their stuff. That felt good. I'm sure at some point I'll get into set design. There were a lot of challenges of making crimes, just because there's a lot of inputs and old inputs that could do things. And anyway, we'll get into that when I talk about set design. The other thing we did was we liked the idea, we were really into terminology. We liked the idea that there were crimes committed. We also liked the idea that there were criminals of some kind. And so the idea we came up was we did a batch. Batch technology coming from original Dominaria with Historic. The idea of a batch is we name something, we then list the things that fall within inside that batch. So we wanted to do, we like the idea of outlaws. These are criminals. We felt outlaws was nice. It also sort of fit the vibe of the world. So outlaws, we knew going in, I think the first two that we knew we needed to have was rogues, because rogues we use for villains all the time, and assassins, because assassins, by definition, killing creatures is a crime. So flavor-wise is a crime, I guess. Anyway, so originally we had rogues and assassins. We wanted to add in a third one. And so I think originally, so there's another, we made a token in the set, which are mercenary tokens. They're 1/1s. I don't think they can block. And you tap them at sorcery speed to give target creature +1/+0. We like the idea that you had minions. One of the big tropes of villainy is villains have minions. We wanted to have minions. We wanted the minions to help the villains rather than be sort of as much... We wanted them to be more supportive, because that's what minions are. And so we designed them, we liked them. We ended up calling them mercenaries. Originally, the plan was only the tokens would be mercenaries. But I think as we were sort of making... when creative was figuring out what the set wanted to be, having mercenary as a tool helped add flavor to things. So mercenary ended up being not just on the tokens. So we added mercenary to it. The fourth one that we added was, I spent some time talking with Doug Beyer, who was the liaison at the time for the creative team. And what he said was, part of what we need to do is make sure that we're covering all our bases, that if design wants, you know, vision design or set design wants a creature to be an outlaw, we need to make sure that however it's concepted, it can be an outlaw. So what Doug said, it was the thing we were missing was, look, we're a game called Magic. There's a lot of magical spells. We really needed some kind of villain version of a spellcaster. So we looked at all the things, and Warlock is definitely our most likely spellcaster to commit crimes. So we put Warlock on there to sort of fill it out. That's what we handed off in vision design. In set design, Dave realized that there were a lot of pirates in Standard because of... Lost Caverns of Ixalan. I mean, pirates very clearly feel like villains. So he threw a couple pirates in and added pirates. Generally on a batch, we usually try to do 3 or 4. I think 5 is our upper limit. We don't really like to do more than 5, just because you have to remember what the batch is. Now, the more flavorful the batch, like, the nice thing about Outlaws is when you see them, there's a connective tissue. Like, oh, yeah, these are the kinds of classes that do bad things. And so connecting them is a lot easier. So we made outlaws, and we made commit crimes, and we liked the... They allowed us to write really fun text boxes, you know, if you've committed a crime, when you commit a crime, you know, if you've cast an outlaw or play an outlaw or an outlaw enter the battlefield. All those words are really nice and played in a way that was fun and easy to work around. Well, when we get to set design, there's some challenges. Whenever you make mechanics, it dictates the structure they have to be in, but that's more... We'll get more into that in the set design part of it. Anyway, so the next thing that we needed to do was we wanted, like I said, the set was about villainy. The idea always that I pitched from the very beginning was I liked the Western as the theme. I liked the Western as the setting. And we could do a lot of top-down individual Western things, which we did. But at the core, the idea of the set to me was... It's the villain set. You, the player, get to be a villain. And what's the cool thing about being a villain? Well, you commit crimes. You have your minions, your outlaws, and stuff. But I also like the idea that one of my favorite tropes of criminals in like pop culture is the smart criminal. I love, for example, when the criminal does something where they outthink the hero. Like the hero gets caught off guard because the villain planned ahead. So the two other mechanics we did really got into that space of planning ahead and being smart. So the first one is plot. So plot basically is there are spells. They have a plot. They can any non-land spell type. They have a cost. That's the plot cost. Sometimes it's the same. Sometimes it's less. Sometimes it's more. It can vary. There we go. And so basically what happened was we made plot. Oh, sorry. The way plot works is that plot is. Sorry. A little bit of traffic trying to stay safe. The reason. What plot does. Sorry. is that once you cast it for the plot cost, it gets exiled. And then on any future turn, you can cast it at sorcery speed for free. It doesn't change what card type it is. It's just when you can cast it. It's still, if it's a creature, it's still a creature and such. The being able to cast a sorcery speed just means when you can cast it. It doesn't turn into a sorcery. And the cool thing about this, it is a subtle mechanic. It's a very Johnny Jenny mechanic. It just lets you set up things. It lets and a lot of the way we made the spells, the plot spells, is that they're built such that when you cast matters so that you can sort of do things. A lot of them care about what happens the turn they're cast. And there's things in the set that care about second spell or care about how many spells or, you know, things that or if you've cast a certain type of spell this turn. There's things that play well with it. And so the idea is that it allows you to sort of set up future turns. One of the things about villainy is the idea that I'm plotting and I'm scheming and I'm figuring out what's going to happen. And that I can set up and then I can make this sort of this master turn where my plan comes to fruition and all the things happen. We want that moment to happen. And like I said, it's a really fun mechanic. It might be my favorite mechanic in the set. But it is a subtle mechanic that at first glance, it's like, well, why can't I just do my spell now? Why would I wait? And you have to understand like why it's valuable to wait. The other sort of criminal mechanic that we did was called Spree. I think we originally called it Mission in design. I think Plot was called Plot in design. Commit Crime, Plot, and Outlaws were all called that in Vision Design. Spree was called Mission. And the idea is we like the idea that you have modal spells. We've done a lot of modal spells. But one of the challenges of making a modal spell is normally you're tied by the mana cost. And what I mean by that is if the mana cost costs something, 3 and a green or whatever, and you have multiple choices, each one of those choices needs to be in effect roughly the size of the cost. Because usually you're locked into that cost. So if I cast a spell that, you know, for 3 and a green has 3 modes, well, each of those modes basically has to be the equivalent of 3 and a green. Or sometimes I have a mode where I pick more than one thing. But nonetheless, normally what happens in a modal spell, the effects have to be roughly of the same power level because you want them to be worth the cost. And the idea that I was really fascinated by was, what if we made a modal spell that had different levels of effect because you, the player, could choose to opt into them but pay for them? So the way that Spree works is you have a mana cost. Usually it's pretty low, usually 1 or 2 mana at most. And then you have, and you'll see there'll be a mana symbol and there'll be a little plus sign next to it in the upper right-hand corner. Then on the card, instead of having a bullet point, there's a plus sign. And what that says is, plus red mana do something, plus 1 in red mana do something, or I'm talking green, 1 green mana, or 1 in green mana, like or 2 colors mana, or 2 generic mana. Like the idea is, it gives you a cost for the effect. And some of them have 2 effects, some have 3 effects, might be some that have 4 effects. I know there's 2 and 3. We turned over one in design that had 4. I'm not 100% sure it stayed. And so the idea is, let's say I have 3 effects. So I have effect A, B, and C. I could cast it, and I could pay to do A, or B, or C, or A and B, or A and C, or B and C, or A, B, and C. I have a lot of options there. I have a lot of choices. And so I think that's 7 choices, is that right? I have a lot of options of what I can do. And so it gives you the player, who's the mastermind, just a lot more options, a lot more flexibility. And the fact that we have cost means that they can be different levels. So one of the neat things about the spells is they really change as the game evolves. Early on, maybe you can only do 1 or 2 of the abilities. Later on, maybe you can combine abilities. Way later on, maybe you can do all the abilities. And so it really plays out differently in a fun way. And like I said, part of the joy of a set where we make you sort of play a role is leaning into what's the funnest thing about that role. What's fun about being a criminal? Yeah, commit crimes and be smart and plan ahead and you know, and do your sprees and stuff. So all that stuff is there. Now, because there was a Western theme, there are 2 mechanics that we did think about that were tied to that. First up is Saddle. And then all the creatures that can be saddled, that have the saddle ability, have the mount creature type. So one of the things that we've been asked for forever, I mean a long, long time, is the idea of creatures you can ride. You know, the idea of horses you can ride, obviously, but this is fantasy, so we have a lot of other creatures you can ride. Our setting is a Western. Okay, riding horses, that's pretty big, right? And so, like, when we did Kaladesh, a lot of people have been asking us to make vehicles forever, and it just felt like we finally got to a set, like, how do we, you know, it was the artifact invention set. Like, how do we not make vehicles here? We felt the same way about saddle here, that we needed to make mount creatures. Like, we needed to do it. We tried a whole bunch of different things. In fact, what we turned, I'm trying to remember what we turned over. What we turned over from Vision is not how we ended up doing it. The way we ended up approaching it, which actually, I'll tell that story in the future, but it was actually started on another set. When we get to that set, I'll talk about it. But anyway, the idea we played around with was, one of the things that happens a lot when you're designing is there's what we call conservation of ideas. I'm trying to teach you to do something. So one of the things I will do is I say, okay, is there anything like that you already do? So we're like, well, vehicles are similar to what we want. Like, oh, look, there is a chariot or a boat or whatever the vehicle is. I want to make that vehicle go. I want to ride that vehicle. Now, in a vehicle, slightly different in that the vehicle has no owner, no agency until I get in it and drive it, until I'm steering the thing. But the idea that I hop on it and now I'm riding it was not that far away from a mount, not far away from riding a horse or something. So he said, okay, can we sort of piggyback on what people already know? And the idea with saddle was, okay, it works just like crew. Saddle has a number. You have to tap creatures equal to that number or more, I believe, to saddle the creature, much like you would crew a vehicle, to saddle a creature, saddle a mount, I guess. And then the difference is that when you do that, you grant some ability to the creature that is saddled. Because what happens with a vehicle is you turn it on, it becomes a creature. Well, the creature's already creatures. So what you're doing is, if you saddle it, you're enhancing it in some way. And it obviously, since that creature could already attack by itself, well, why don't I just attack with both creatures? Why do I not attack with one creature to saddle the second creature? And the answer is, the creature I'm saddling is gaining in abilities, so maybe I want to do, like, maybe I want it to have evasion. And if my little creature hops on, now it's evasive, and now it can't be blocked, or, you know, there are different reasons. But the idea of matching vehicles so that it worked similar to vehicles, we felt it just made it that much easier to understand and to learn. Conservation of idea is an important design concept. Maybe one day I'll do a whole podcast on that. It's a very important concept. Anyway, so we made a bunch of saddle creatures because it's very fantasy. There are some horses, but there are a lot of other fun things that you can ride that are fantasy-esque and stuff. And then the other thing that we looked into was, in Arabian Nights, the very first Magic expansion, Richard came up with the idea of doing a land subtype that wasn't one of the five basic lands. I think in Alpha, the only subtypes that exist are the basic land subtypes. And in Arabian Nights, Richard introduces the first land subtype, Desert. Made a lot of sense for Arabian Nights, you know, have the Arabian Nights flavor. Anyway, we have had some success. So the story here is, go back to Return to Ravnica. The lesson we learned from original Ravnica was we needed more mana production. We didn't have enough mana production. So the way we solved that, we said, okay, we're going to bring the Shocklands back at rare like they were, because they're very iconic to Ravnica, but we're going to add a common cycle of dual lands. And usually our common dual lands are what we call tap lands. They come and play tapped, and then you can, on future turns, you can tap them for one of the two colors. The problem was that Shocklands were kind of tap lands plus. The way Shocklands work, for those that don't remember, they can come and play tapped if you choose, but you can take two damage to have them come and play untapped. So you have the they're basically tap lands with an option to not be tap lands. So we felt a little weird that the tap land, like, it, it's not that Magic doesn't do strictly worse. We definitely make cards that are worse than cards elsewhere. We do try to avoid somewhat doing strictly worse in the same set. I mean, Richard didn't in Alpha, so it doesn't always happen that way. But we do try. We try to separate our strictly worse so they're in different sets, so they're not right in front of your face. Different sets will do things at different values. So it's like, hey, in this set, this is not as strong as in another set. But within the same set, we've been trying to be a little better about not doing strictly worse. So we're trying to come up with, like, what's a little tiny thing we can add to these lands that make them not strictly worse. And the idea we came up with was doing the gate subtype. Oh, there are gates. The gates are the main areas of the guilds where the guilds sort of collect together. And then we can make some cards that cared about gates because gates was a subtype. That philosophy of using land subtypes has proven valuable. We've done it other places. Sometimes they're subtypes, sometimes they're super types, like snow, for example. Anyway, that seemed valuable. So we're like, okay, could we do what we've done with deserts here? Could we do what we did with gates? So what gates were to Ravnica, return to Ravnica, could deserts be here? So we did do that. There are a bunch of lands. There's actually a cycle at common. There's 10 dual lands at common that are, they enter the battlefield tapped, but they do one damage when they enter, which is a crime. So we called them the crime lands. So they were simple dual lands that also committed a crime, which was valuable. And we decided to make those deserts. So they have the subtype deserts. And then the set, there are some other deserts in the set. And then the set has a light Desert Matters theme. I think there's also one of the commander decks, I believe, has a little bit of a Desert Matters theme in it. So anyway, so the idea there was to just to give a little bit of flavor to sort of the Western feel, we added Saddle, we added deserts. And that, I mean, there's a lot of top-down. The other place where the Western comes through is, because it's the genre, there's a lot of individual card design to there. There's also a lot of villain. Like, we made a list of all the villain tropes. We made a list of all the Western tropes. And all that stuff is there. We also, sort of a subtype of the villain tropes is heist tropes. You'll notice, for example, that Oko, who's the ringleader, has a gang. And each of the gang in their card sort of talks about what role they fill in the gang. Are they the muscle? You know, what are they doing for the gang? And so each one sort of has their role, which is kind of playing into the heist stuff. Anyway, and so any other mechanic I haven't remembered. The other thing that I said is every set definitely wants a feel and a tone, and the villainy. Oh, the other thing we did. Sorry. Okay. Once we knew, like I said, we wanted to really highlight villainy across the multiverse. Part of the fun of the set was showcasing that. So what we did is we went to the creative team and said, what we want is we want a lot of legendary creatures that players already know that in other worlds are villains and bring them here. And so I don't know exactly, but there's like 10 plus worlds that we found villains on and we brought them here. There are villains from Ravnica and Innistrad and Fiora and Kaldheim and New Capenna. Like, we pull them from all over the place to sort of make the sense. So the set really has that, like, doing something we don't normally get to do is there is this sort of this, there's a nostalgia element to it of seeing things that you enjoy of the theme from across the multiverse from many different planes. And I thought that's a lot of fun and definitely adds another element. Like, one of the things of the cosmology change is the idea of, hey, the reason we make changes is so we can make things we couldn't make before. And one of the themes you'll see, about every year, but once a year, I'm trying to make a set that just we couldn't have made before. I want to make something brand new. So the next one up in the following year will be Tennis, the Deathway set. We'll get to Tennis, we'll get there. But anyway, guys, that is the story of the making of Outlaws of Thunder Junction. To answer just a question that I keep getting online, Thunder Junction is the name of the plane. The people that came there, that is what they called it. The other question I get is why, if one of the stories of the plane was the plane before the Omen Pass happened. It was a desolate plane. Nobody was there. It is not until the Omen Pass opened up. And for some reason, this particular path had a lot more Omen Pass to a lot more worlds. Meaning, it became like, and one of the things about the Omen Pass, one of the themes we're playing into, is the idea that, hey, if you could leave your world, why would you? Like, why would you leave your world? Maybe some people, it's a dangerous world. And other people, one of the things we like about the villain set is like, well, maybe you've gotten in trouble in your world. Maybe I'll leave because, hey, I'm a wanted fugitive in my world, so maybe I'll go to another world where I'm not a wanted fugitive. And one of the questions I've also gotten is, okay, there's a heist there, but like, what's their value? So it turns out, I won't get too much into the behind the scenes here, but there's a vault that was, there are creatures from before the Omen Pass, that did have the ability to travel between planes, that needed to hide something here, and built a giant vault. So the vault predates, the vault's been here for a long, 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 long time, and there's valuables in the vault. That is what they're after. It is not, the things they're trying to steal are not new things, and not something brought by people that came through the Omen Pass. So to answer that question. Okay, guys, but I am now at work, so I hope this was a good, gave you a good insight of how we made Outlaws of Thunder Junction. I will do a podcast talking about the set design. This was about the vision design, but that is for another podcast. So anyway, as I'm at work, we all know what that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to make a magic. I hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast, and I will see you next time.